I'm Mark Irons. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Down to the Wire. House Republicans work with the White House to wrangle support for President Trump's big, beautiful bill as the July 4th deadline approaches. Path to peace. Israel accepts the terms of a 60-day ceasefire backed by President Trump. How Hamas is responding. The fight for life. One member of parliament tries to slow the expansion of new assisted suicide measures in Canada. And deepening prayer life. Pope Leo offers advice for newlyweds. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, House Republicans may have to wait another day to pass a massive bill preserving tax cuts while also cutting billions in spending. That's because a number of conservative lawmakers are holding out, demanding changes, and won't vote for the Senate's version because it violates the framework passed by House Republicans. But House Majority Leader Steve Scalise says it's good enough.
You look at the whole totality of the bill, still over 85% of what the House passed a few weeks ago are still in this final product. And, you know, the bottom line is the Trump agenda is still in this bill.
But Democrats blasted Republicans, mostly over Medicaid cuts, saying that over 17 million people will lose their health insurance and hospitals will close.
People are going to die. Connected to this one big ugly bill, tens of thousands of unnecessary American deaths per year. Shame on Republicans for even bringing this bill.
Catholic Congressman Darren Soto cites cuts to Medicaid and food programs for his opposition.
The Bible teaches us heal the sick, feed the poor, welcome the stranger, and all these things are in a much worse position as a result of this bill.
Republicans say that's not true.
We're going to take care of our most vulnerable. And those folks on Medicaid, whether it be a pregnant woman, whether it be a disabled person or a senior citizen in a nursing home, they're untouched with the Medicaid changes.
Some 100 Democrats keep asking for an amendment restoring Medicaid and food assistance cuts, but they were ruled out of order. The House Freedom Caucus votes are key to passing the bill. They met with President Trump today and issued a statement demanding changes, writing, "The bill increases deficits, fails to ensure that illegals are removed from Medicare rolls, limits Planned Parenthood funds for only 1 year, not 10, allows Medicaid funding for transgender surgeries, limits state and local tax deductions to 5 years. Many Republicans say it's time to pass the bill containing much of President Trump's domestic agenda.
The train has left the station, it is rolling down the track, and we have a lot of momentum. We need everyone to get on board to get this over the finish line, but it's going to happen. We are going to pass this. The president will have it on his desk and hopefully sign it into law on Independence Day.
Republicans want to have the bill on the president's desk by July 4th. The president says if the bill passes, America will have an economic renaissance like never before. And he warns Republicans, quote, don't let the radical left Democrats push you around. Meanwhile, Catholic bishops continue to voice their concerns over the bill. White House correspondent Owen Jensen has more. Owen.
Mark, good evening to you. Lawmakers were headed here to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue today to sit down with President Trump and discuss the bill. Among them, Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett, who recorded himself on video as he was leaving.
Big day today, folks. Hopefully we get this thing worked out. President answered all our questions, was very informative. J.D. Vance was there.
With just a few days until the fireworks fly, President Donald Trump presses hard on social media, trying to push the measure over the finish line. He writes, nobody wants to talk about growth, which will be the primary reason that the Big Beautiful Bill will be one of the most successful pieces of legislation ever passed. This growth has already begun at levels never seen before. And the president continues, our country will make a fortune this year, more than any of our competitors, but only if the Big Beautiful Bill is passed. Just yesterday on Air Force One, President Trump told reporters,
the bill passed, and I think it's going to do very well in the House. We'll see how that works out, but looks like it's ahead of schedule. See what happens. Happy about it.
The bill would extend and make permanent various tax breaks Republicans passed in President Trump's first term, and temporarily remove taxes on tips and overtime. But Catholic bishops warn it provides tax breaks for some while undermining the social safety net for others through major cuts to nutrition assistance and Medicaid.
Bishops also asked lawmakers to think and act with courage and creativity to preserve human dignity and uphold the common good. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Today we are learning that Israel has accepted a deal that would bring about a 60-day ceasefire in its war against Hamas. President Trump first announced the deal last night on his Truth Social account, saying Israel agreed to the deal after talks between the two countries. However, Israel had not confirmed the deal until today. Speaking in Estonia, Israel's foreign minister said the country is serious in its desire to reach a ceasefire and hostage deal. Meanwhile, Hamas says it is reviewing the deal but has not said whether it would accept it. Right now, we'd like to bring on Daniel Flesch from the Allison Center for National Security. Daniel, as of right now, we don't know the details of this deal. What would both sides have to do to agree to a ceasefire?
Well, good evening, Mark. From the Israeli side, they've maintained two primary objectives since the beginning of the war. One is the defeat of Hamas, the removal of it as certainly a military force and also a political force in Gaza, and the retrieval of the hostages, both those who are still believed to be alive and those who are confirmed dead. So from Israel's perspective, they want the hostages out, and they want Hamas to surrender. From Hamas's perspective, they want to survive. And that means the bare minimum, they want to be a force in Gaza. And their big leverage here are the hostages. So we have always been at impasses. It's always been Hamas not wanting to agree too much because they want to, again, stay alive effectively and as a governing force in Gaza. And their main cards to play have been hostages. So it remains to be seen how this plays out going forward. But certainly Hamas's initial reaction of rejecting the ceasefire was unsurprising.
We heard from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu earlier today, who essentially said Hamas must cease to continue. Let's take a listen.
I'm telling you, there will be no Hamas. There will be no Hamastan. We're not going back to that. It's over. We'll release all our hostages, and we will defeat Hamas. There will not be Hamas.
So even if a ceasefire is accepted, is a long-term peace deal negotiable?
You can't have peace with Hamas. Every Israeli knows that. Those who didn't know it before October 7th certainly know it after the fact. So the question is, for Israel's security reasons, can they actually allow a deal that has Hamas retain some sort of presence in Gaza, both Israel being able to go back into Gaza if it needs be for its own security purposes? That is part of the sticking point here as well. But no Israeli and no American, for that matter, should be under any illusion that peace is possible with Hamas.
And we know in Israel right now, anti-war protests have started up again recently. What kind of impact will they have on the Israeli government's decisions regarding the war?
Well, you've had these protests continuing for some time, if not even over a year. Israel had wall-to-wall support for its operation against Iran, for the war against Hezbollah. For Gaza, it's been a bit of a different story because of the presence of the hostages. But this, that these protests have resumed, is unsurprising. Israel is a very vibrant democratic society, a very liberal society, and so people exercise their right to protest and to make their voices heard, and this is unsurprising. But then again, Israel is unified in its need to win this war, both defeating Hamas and retrieving the hostages. But the Israeli government will respond to these protests in some parts. But we're going to see next week when the prime minister comes here to Washington, D.C., what kind of negotiations take place with the president to see that this war comes to an end.
We'll leave it there for now. Daniel Flesch, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
President Volodymyr Zelensky is responding to an announcement that the U.S. will hold back some of its deliveries of weapons to Ukraine. In a message on Telegram, Zelensky wrote his country is now clarifying all the details regarding the supply of defense support, including air defense components. It comes as Russian forces launched their summer offensive against Ukraine. White House spokeswoman Anna Kelly wrote in a statement that the DOD decided to halt some shipments after a review found American military stockpiles to be low. The Kremlin spokesperson welcomed the announcement, saying the less weapons are supplied to Ukraine, the closer the end of the special military operation. A priest in Mexico is in critical condition after being shot while on his way to visit a sick parishioner. Church officials say Father Hector Perez, a parish priest, was shot in what is believed to be a case of mistaken identity. The local bishop made an urgent appeal for blood donors to help Father Hector. The attack in southeastern Mexico is the latest violence against the faithful in the North American country. Late last month, 11 people were killed during a shooting at a festival for the Nativity of John the Baptist.
For more, we turn to Jason Poblet, founder of the Global Liberty Alliance. Jason, along with the incidents we mentioned, in May, at least seven people were killed after gunmen targeted a party organized by a local church in central Mexico. Just how many attacks are there on the faithful in Mexico, and what is behind this?
Well, Mark, thank you for having us again. As always, it's fantastic that EWTN focuses a spotlight on these type of cases, as difficult as a subject matter may happen to be. And you're right, in Mexico right now, for your viewers, Mexico is a very divided country as far as it's where it is with the cartels. It's a country that in some cases, experts say, is overrun by and controlled by transnational criminal organizations. And there's several big ones. And this particular incident, by the way, even though they were quick to say that it was accidental, I still think we have to allow the process to if they can even investigate, figure out what exactly happened there, because he may have been caught in the crossfire. He may not have been caught in the crossfire. What happened recently with those 12 or more people who were killed, that was, I believe, a targeted attack on Catholics. May have been a cross, may have not been a cross attack. So I think it's something we're seeing around the world. Pope Leo a few weeks ago talked about the attack against our Eastern Orthodox friends in Syria. We're seeing similar incidents in Burkina Faso. We're seeing persecution of Christians around the world. And what's really important about what's happening south of our border is that this is something that impacts us right here. It impacts Americans, and why it's so important that we collaborate, continue working with the Mexican government to the extent we can. That's not very easy to do sometimes when it comes to this issue, and we can talk the whole show about why Mexico welcomes or does not welcome our support in combating transnational criminal organizations like these cartels. But for Catholics and for Christians throughout the region, this is extremely important. The incidence here is much higher in some cases than what we're seeing in the Middle East, but we don't talk a lot about them, and we should. So it's great that EW2N is doing that.
Well, what is being done to keep the faithful safe, and have any church leaders or the president of Mexico addressed this issue?
Well, for the church, it's a very difficult situation, right? Think about this. They're stuck between the sovereign Mexican government and the cartels. Sometimes the bishops have to focus on having difficult conversations with cartel leaders. It's not as if they condone the violence. They don't. They do not condone the crime either. But we have to operate in this environment where we want the Mexican government to do more. But in some cases, this particular president of Mexico, who puts herself out sometimes as a, quote, believer, I do not believe she's a friend of the Catholic Church, even though she puts herself out there as a person who believes in religious freedom. This is somebody who's, some experts believe, she is compromised by cartels. So we need to work close with Mexico. This is a very difficult relationship. We have to come to the defense of these people in the region who need our help. And I think the United States can play a very constructive role in that process. And the U.S. government has been doing this for a long time. And I hope Mexico will do more to protect the Catholic Church from these groups throughout the region.
Let's talk a little bit more about it. Earlier today, Secretary of State Marco Rubio spoke with Mexico's foreign minister. What did they discuss, and do you expect anything to come out of this call?
It appears from what they publicly said about the meeting that they did talk about the violence. It was a very short statement. But I do believe Secretary Rubio, who understands the region, understands Mexico and the importance of Mexico to the United States, will put this up there on a list of priorities of things that we can do together to help combat transnational criminal groups like these cartels. And hopefully Mexico will come around. I can't underscore enough, we're partners here. We should work together. This impacts us on both sides of the border. And by the way, this is a good example of how Americans, you know, we want to welcome people here who come legally. And a lot of times this battle over illegal immigration, we can't bring in people who are being persecuted because we have so many people who are coming in through our borders illegally. So this is a good example of where we can work together to clean up the immigration rolls and help bring people who are being persecuted to our country. That's why they come here. They flee this type of violence, which is, by the way, very violent, something that's happening not just to Catholic priests, but happening to religious of all types in Mexico.
Jason Poblet, founder of Global Liberty Alliance, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a law banning abortion has been overturned in a U.S. state. We'll tell you where it happened, and we'll talk with the executive director of the state's Catholic Conference. Plus, an Ivy League school is banning transgender athletes from performing in women's sports. What led them to the decision? The Wisconsin Supreme Court has struck down a state abortion ban law which dated back to 1849. The 4-3 ruling says the last 50 years of comprehensive legislation on abortion regulation had implicitly repealed the law. Plaintiffs brought the case in the wake of the 2022 Dobbs decision, which repealed Roe v. Wade and returned abortion to the states. Catholic leaders have called out the decision for failing to protect human life. Wisconsin Catholic Conference Executive Director Barbara Sella said in a statement in part, quote, "A civilized society does not sanction taking the lives of its own children." In 1849, Wisconsin banned abortion, and in 1853, it abolished the death penalty. There is no other way to read this decision than that the court's majority has abandoned Wisconsin's proud legacy of protecting all human life. And Barbara Sella joins us now. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us. We just heard the strong words you had on this decision. Tell us a little bit more about what makes this so tragic.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak. So the decision today is tragic for two reasons. First and foremost, because the court's 4-3 majority decision, in effect, sanctions killing the most innocent human lives. So when a court removes protections from an entire class of human beings, it is, in effect, abandoning the heart of American democracy that we're all created equal and endowed with inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But secondly, what's so tragic about this decision is that it is it follows really illogical reasoning, and it refuses to consider all the relevant facts. So essentially, the court's majority holds that laws enacted in the last 50 years to restrict abortion actually repealed the abortion ban. This is absolutely nonsensical. For the past 175 years, everyone in Wisconsin, supporters and opponents alike, understood that 940-04, the one that they just declared is struck down, is repealed, that 940-04 and its subsequent amendments, that these reflected the legislature's intent that abortion should remain illegal. And, you know, session after session, pro-life groups and abortion rights groups did everything in their power to either protect or overturn this abortion ban. So it just is, it's nonsense.
What effect do you see this decision having potentially nationwide?
Well, I think several effects. One is that, tragically, this shows that another state has fallen to the pro-abortion forces. In state after state, post-Dobbs, we've seen abortion rights groups winning in state legislatures and in state courts. But here's where I see a ray of hope, because these victories are based on such illogical reasoning, such suppression of relevant facts, the use of deadly euphemisms, and the fundamental denial of human rights, that I'm hoping that reasonable and justice-minded people will start to wake up. Abortion kills. It creates untold familial and political divisions. It's unworthy of a civilized nation that is founded on the principle of human equality.
Going forward, what role will the church play in Wisconsin now that this law is overturned?
Well, as you know, the Catholic Church in Wisconsin, like everywhere in the world, will always uphold, insist on the intrinsic value of every human life from conception to natural death. We want to see mothers, fathers, and children thrive. And we long for the day when mothers will not be pitted against their preborn children and not encouraged to discard them as though human beings are throwaway objects. So despite this tragic ruling, the Catholic Church in Wisconsin will continue to support public policies that embrace both women and children. We support expanding health care and postpartum care, safe and affordable housing, adoption assistance, and a host of other policies. And then at a very practical level, we tell everyone, if you or someone you know needs support, please reach out to a local parish, even if you don't belong to that parish. Reach out to Catholic Charities, which can help you, connect to pregnancy resource centers. So today's decision is a wake-up call for people of goodwill, right? Get involved in defending life, and we can all do it in some form or another.
The work for life must continue. Barbara Sella, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
The University of Pennsylvania has announced it will ban transgender athletes from participating in women's sports. The college also agreed to erase all records set by swimmer Leah Thomas as part of an agreement to resolve a federal civil rights case brought by the government. The Education Department's Office of Civil Rights said the university was in violation of Title IX by allowing males in female sports. The school's president says he is pleased the college could resolve the issue. Now to Canada, where one member of parliament is putting up a fight against the expansion of an assisted suicide bill.
The message it sends that struggling Canadians, trauma survivors, battling depression, schizophrenia, PTSD, are being told that death is a solution we're now willing to offer in response to a life of suffering, often compounded by harm this very society has caused them. That's not health care. That's not compassion. It's abandonment.
Tamara Jansen has introduced a private member's bill which would prevent mental disorders from being considered an irreversible medical condition for the purposes of assisted suicide. The bill is scheduled for second reading at the next sitting of the House. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, advice that is joyful and sorrowful. Pope Leo's suggestion to newlyweds on strengthening their prayer life. Plus, the Pope's childhood home is no longer on the market. Who bought it and why? Parts of Europe are baking under a relentless heat wave as Spain and England record their hottest June ever. Health warnings remain in effect for several countries. Officials say the abnormally hot weather is exposing millions of Europeans to high heat stress. The heat has become so bad the iconic Eiffel Tower remains closed to visitors in France. This as parts of Italy experienced a blackout following a surge in electricity demand. The Solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul coincides every year with an initiative for the global church to help those in need. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Valentina Di Donato has more on Peter's Pence.
Peter's Pence is a term first used in the medieval era to identify the annual contribution paid to the Holy See by the states and local lordships under the sovereignty of the Pope. And today it encourages all the faithful to give as a way of showing charity to those in need. The 2024 annual funds report on Peter's Pence, produced by the Vatican, showed that $68.3 million were raised, an increase of $7 million from the previous year. Of those donations, $15.3 million helped fund 239 projects in 66 countries around the world. The report shows how the donations were put into action to help the Pope's mission. Global projects that help the mission of the Catholic Church by giving support in countries that are hit by a wide variety of crises. Projects that give aid and hope to those who have been affected by war, natural disasters, migrants and refugees fleeing persecution, lack of access to infrastructure and healthcare. This year on the Solemnity, Pope Leo reminded pilgrims of the significance of these donations.
This feast also marks the annual Peter Spence collection, which is a sign of communion with the Pope and participation in his apostolic ministry. I heartily thank all those who, with their gifts, support my first steps as the successor of Peter.
To receive in order to give, and to give to those who are most in need at that time. The Holy Father also sent funds from Peter's Pence to the Lebanese church that in this moment is facing challenges from war and instability. People suffering from the effects of explosions, leading to hundreds of thousands of people being injured and displaced. The destruction of buildings, churches, and monasteries, and hospitals. Donations were also sent to Haiti following the devastating earthquake leading to 2,200 victims and more than 1,200 injured people. The funds that were sent to the affected population of Haiti were during the emergency phase. Like the donation from Peter's Pence that were also sent to the Ukrainian refugees who have been displaced by war, an act of solidarity that helped fund access to healthcare materials. Donations to Greece were also made to support the people affected by the fires that ravaged the island of Evia, destroying over 247,105 acres of land, fields, and crops. The fires left 70 victims and damage to neighboring cities and villages. Crisis, conflict, and natural disasters have swept many places on the planet, but the solidarity and unity of people to help resolve these issues with even a small donation gives a semblance of hope. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
The village of Dalton, Chicago, is set to buy Pope Leo XIV's childhood home. The village's board unanimously voted on Tuesday to take control of the property. Members of the board say the purchase is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Then Robert Prevost lived in the home after his birth in 1955, and his parents lived there until it was sold in the mid-90s. The sale is likely to close within the next 2 weeks. Finally tonight, a newlywed couple received the amazing chance to meet Pope Leo just a few days after their wedding and even got some advice along the way. When Anna and Cole Stevens met with the Holy Father, they asked how they could strengthen their prayer life. Pope Leo responded by telling them to go slowly and find the style of prayer that works for them and their spirituality. He then cited the example of his parents, who prayed the rosary together every day. The couple says the Holy Father then gave them a blessing and entrusted them to the Holy Family. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Mark Irons. Good night, and God bless.